This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Let me say something firstly about Plymouth University. And as I say, we do have a relatively good track record in terms of EU funding, €11 million over the last 4 years, top 50 research university. In the last RAE Research Fortnight magazine's most improved university for the RAE, and key areas of expertise, particularly marine and robotics. And I think an important point, very much a university that is, in some senses, off the curve, in that we are socially inclusive, 95% of students coming from state schools, and at the same time, a relatively high Q research income. And given the benefits of research-informed teaching, I think that is something that we very much want to maintain. In terms of the areas that we've been successful in terms of EU funding, particularly robotics, through the Framework 7 programme, iTalk, studying how language and action interact with cognition using humanoid robot. I've seen this at first hand, absolutely fascinating, groundbreaking. Marie Curie, ITN, robot doc, also training early career researchers to study cognition, and a real area of expertise where the EU funding stream has supported us. Similarly, marine, where in the Framework 6 programme, ELM helped us to model the impact of EU policy on the human impact of Europe's regional seas, and very much in a multidisciplinary way that I'll actually come back to, and a number of other strands, both in Framework 6 and in Framework 7. So let me set some of the overall EU scene. And I think all of us know this, that in terms of research and innovation, the UK has a relatively solid foundation. But I think Europe as a whole, to some extent, lags behind and faces a real risk of moving further behind. Certainly the US, certainly Japan and China catching us up very fast. We've got a strong base, a quarter of total world R&D expenditure at the moment within the EU. Some real tangible major assets in terms of our human capital, 1.5 million FTE researchers within the EU. That's more than the US, more than Japan, with China just ahead. But the key challenge that on the current trend, China is set to overtake the EU by 2014 in terms of the intensity of R&D expenditure. And the big challenge that the EU will need to create at least 1 million new research jobs if it's to reach the target that's been set under the 2020 proposals of an R&D intensity of 3% by 2020. Certainly the current government, the BIS perspective, is that there needs to be a reorientation of research funding through the EU with greater support towards research and innovation within an overall budget that it sees as falling. And I think the other challenge that we're facing is that the emerging economies have moved away from cost competition and imitation very much into the field of innovation. So we're doing well. We've captured a lot across the EU, but intense competition and very much a sense I think we need to up our game. The relevance of EU research funding, it generates innovation, research funding. Innovation drives, as we know, economic growth. A need, I think, across the board to increase our applications to get a greater share of funding. The EU has set itself the target of getting 1 million doctoral graduates, a big push, and I think that presents opportunities for us here in the UK. And I don't want to overstate it, because the proportions are relatively small, but I think in the right areas, European innovation partnerships can accelerate and do accelerate UK research relevance. And certainly, I think EU funding can be relevant. Again, if I look at the Plymouth experience over the last 4 years, if you take the EU funding stream alongside the RAE, it's been worth about a fifth, the equivalent of a fifth of our research funding. And it has certainly supported researcher mobility, transnational access to research infrastructure and coordinated programmes. And I think that has been a significant plus. It helps, I think, in a real sense to drive collaboration. supporting partnerships with groups across Europe and critically beyond. And I think that's a really important plus in terms of internationalisation, both capacity building and shared excellence, access to shared resources and technology, those opportunities I talked about for postgraduate and postdoc students, and this is both a current recurring theme, but I think as the EU funding stream moves forward, a greater focus on industry and business and commercialisation. Innovation for growth. Increasingly, if you look at the consultation that recently took place in terms of the strategic framework, an increased focus on coordination, on impact, on real evaluation, dissemination, and commercialisation. To put some of that in context in terms of what it's actually worth, and again, people will be to some extent familiar with this, the Framework 7 programme worth between 6 to 10 billion euros by the end of 2013. Put that in context, overall, 5% of overall EU civil investment and research and innovation. And I think there is now well-documented and solid evidence that the Framework 6 programme contributed to increased industrial competitiveness, generated extended networks, and strengthened knowledge and infrastructure in Europe. A really strong focus on ensuring that research and innovation actually maps the societal trends that the Commission, the Council of Ministers have actually set forward in terms of climate change, energy, water security, food security, the ageing population, and the protection of natural resources, with a real focus upon innovation. And a very strong thrust of working with small and medium-sized enterprises, seeing universities as the research arm for SMEs, a current programme of over €1 billion to actually spread that, the objective of strengthening the innovation capacities of SMEs, given their crucial role and crucial importance within the economy of the EU as a whole. And I think that does give us real opportunities within the EU, within the UK. It really is about strengthening the innovation capacity of SMEs and their contribution to economic growth. There's a very real belief within the Commission that this is key to renewing the Lisbon strategy for economic growth and employment. And it is about supporting SMEs by outsourcing their research activities, both individually and in terms of associations of SMEs. I think an opportunity to support the national agenda, knowledge transfer. We're facing fiscal challenges, but I think the EU funding route can actually help us to navigate some of this and can bring in an additional funding stream. And I think it can help us to grow regional innovation landscape. And we've certainly seen that in the southwest through Plymouth University with our innovation centres in Cornwall, the Tamar Science Park and marine commercialisation. Very strong focus on multidisciplinary approach across the technologies. And again, an example which we've already experienced in Plymouth, and other universities will have had similar stories such as this, but a European Lifestyles and Marine Ecosystems project, a four-year programme involving 20 institutions across Europe, pioneering interdisciplinary approaches, but crossing the boundaries, combining teams of ecologists, chemists, modellers and fishery scientists with lawyers, economists and anthropologists to look at the impact of human activity upon the European seas. And I think that is an existing theme of multidisciplinary approaches through the EU funding stream, and I think as we're moving forward it's likely to increase. What are the issues? And this will be familiar to many of you who've engaged through the European funding route. I think often a sense that it's too bureaucratic, that it is too financially complex, resource demanding, excessive financial reporting to the European Commission, especially for the university that takes on the role of the lead partner, requiring dedicated staff, timesheet requirements administratively demanding, and I think our experience at Plymouth, certainly the Interreg programme, the auditing process was particularly onerous, and certainly some experience that the initial negotiation with the Commission post the award of a contract can be extensive, and in a real sense can shift the goalposts. And a three-year contract turns into a four-year contract with no additional funding. And I think if the EU is to get this right and to get better engagement from universities and from business, those issues very much need to be tackled. What is the European vision for the future? And this is, if you like, my view, Plymouth University's view, but I think it will have a lot of commonality across the UK higher education sector. I think a strong belief that R&I policies can significantly contribute to helping us face up to those grand challenges across the EU, that we need better to focus on a limited number of key areas that correspond to those challenges and can help us have a better correlation between research output and the EU 2020 vision. And I think as well a common strategic framework that should support the full innovation cycle and assist lagging and middling regions to drive innovation and development and a stronger knowledge economy. And also, and I think this is a significant challenge for us here in the UK, greater SME engagement. If you look at our performance relatively, there's not the same degree of engagement through SMEs. Of course, there are bureaucratic funding challenges, but I think we need to work better to actually face up to and challenge that issue. And yes, we need simplification. Yes, we need a trust-based system and a tolerance of risk. And if I look back to my previous life, I think that's one of the acute dilemmas for the European funding stream, because whenever something goes wrong in terms of European funding, its actual reality is magnified manyfold because it comes from Europe. But if you're actually to succeed, if you're actually to really innovate, then there does need to be a trust-based system and a tolerance of risk. Increased flexibility, as I said, greater SME engagement, keeping accounting and reporting to the minimum, an emphasis on impact, a balance between curiosity and agenda-driven. And I think the funding stream needs to develop in that regard. Coherence and linking up with other programmes, addressing those grand societal challenges and alignment with Europe 2020. In terms of the direction of travel and the common strategic framework, which was recently consulted on, very much sets this out, a strategic and connected approach, very much based on collaboration across the European Union, but also beyond the European Union, really adding value in terms of internationalisation and a real focus on SMEs and multidisciplinary activity. In terms of the next steps, it is going to be about an emphasis on societal benefit, the importance of continuing investment. And if you look through the documents that are coming out of the Commission, they are making the argument that even in a time of fiscal constraint, there needs to be a relative prioritisation for investment in education, R&D and innovation. And I think if we look across nations at the moment, there are some countries that are, even at the time of cuts, prioritising that area. And I think that's something that we need to look at. Stronger links between the EU and national research and innovation systems. Modernising our education system, despite all the challenges and all the introspection and questioning we're going through within UK higher education at the moment. I think in terms of our structure, we have got a lot right in terms of university autonomy, in terms of additional funding streams with the fee income that comes to universities. The rest of the European Union, by and large, doesn't replicate that situation. And if Europe is to compete and to continue to compete and be sustainable, I think elsewhere in Europe that issue needs to be faced up to. More innovation from research and that recurring theme of greater cooperation between research and business. In conclusion, I don't want to overstate the importance of the European funding stream, but I think in certain regards it can be significant and an important funding stream. It can help us to add capacity and to align the national and the EU effort, and it can help us to face up to the huge challenges societally that we're facing within the EU. Because I think if you look at what's happening in the world, we do face a real danger and a risk of Europe as a whole stagnating and moving backwards, whilst other countries that are changing dramatically very much come forward. So I think that's the challenge. I think it's something that we need to focus on very clearly, and I think we need to make sure that we get the connect between the national systems and the EU systems right. Can I thank you for listening? Hope you enjoy the rest of the conference, and I'll happily engage in any questions for the short time available. Thank you.
We could have about 5 minutes of questions, as Bill has very kindly agreed to stay. I would ask you to stand. There will be microphones. Say who you are and ask your question. I think we've probably only got time for a couple, though, so who's going to be first? A gentleman in the middle on the aisle.
John Rogers, University of Stirling. We have the pleasure of hosting a couple of the Commission's auditors this week, which I always enjoy. And I was talking to them about some of these forward-looking points as part of the process earlier in the week. And we were looking very much at this question about supporting SME engagement in Horizon 2020. The risk for SMEs of engaging in framework programmes is something that you implied but didn't pull out explicitly, and that risk is that they won't get paid, they'll get hit with a massive clawback 3 or 4 years down the line, that they'll have to deal with the bureaucratic overhead. What I was suggesting was that if we moved to a trusted institute status model of audit, that might enable universities to help de-risk participation for SMEs. Now, that would require quite careful thinking about the funding flows and the use of public money, but it could be a new way of developing knowledge exchange structures that would actually achieve one of the key issues. Is that an idea worth pressing?
If we take another question, then okay. I'll get Bill to answer okay. both. Have we got another question? No. Okay. Bill.
I think, John, that's a really interesting idea. Of course, it immediately makes me think of trusted status under the UK Border Agency, and that doesn't always feel trusted at the moment. But I think, you know, certainly if you look at the UK performance, and I think across Europe there's somewhat of a better performance in terms of SME engagement, but there are some real obstacles, and I think that risk is a challenge. If we did take on that trusted status, I think it might provide a degree of security. And I think we, you know, as the consultation goes forward, well, the consultation's finished, but I think we ought to push those ideas, and the UK government can play a role there. I also think working with groups of SMEs through associations rather than individually, so you share the risk, has got to be part of the way forward. But I come back to the point I made in the presentation, and, you know, I, you know, in my former life, I was, before I was a minister, member of the European Scrutiny Committee. And, you know, every time something that was relatively, incredibly small in terms of expenditure went wrong, or there was a disaster, or there was a problem, and if it was European funding, the impact of it, the importance of it, was magnified out of all proportion. Now, I think that's a bit of a UK problem with the EU funding stream. But, you know, I do think that if you're genuinely to innovate, if you're genuinely to make a difference, then you need to liberate people. You have to have a degree of risk. And, you know, if you're really to succeed, sometimes you fail. And I think there needs to be a greater tolerance of that within the EU funding stream. But it's difficult, and maybe the university trusted status might be a way of actually doing that better and getting more SMEs involved.
Well, thank you very much.
If there are no more questions, can I ask one? Is that allowed?
Yes, of course, yes.
I mean, you referred to EU Framework 7 grants as being financially complex, but actually, they're financially, they don't hang together. Universities have to heavily subsidise these. I have a department that does have a lot of research grant income, and I guess about 20%, maybe 4 million a year is EU. But all the financial systems are geared around the way non-UK but other EU countries work. So the fact that the overheads are negligible, the fact that EU grants don't pay VAT, fine if you're in Europe, because usually for purchases for research are exempt from VAT, not in the UK. We have to find the extra 20%. We can't pass that on to another sponsor. No one's just going to pick up the VAT on an EU grant. Marie Curie can't charge fees. They're negligible in much of Europe. They're substantial in the UK. So, and of course, the overhead is really small compared with the proportion of FEC that we demand of other sponsors. So we do go away for European projects. We do it because it takes us into a network. That's useful, usually. But it's a loss leader, and we think carefully about what we're doing, and we subsidise it.
Yeah, and all of that is valid and accurate. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not just the EU funding stream where you don't get the full economic cost, although not to the same extent, I acknowledge that. It is worth it at the end of the day in financial terms, but often it's a lot more than that. It is that multinational engagement of academics, also not just within the European Union, but beyond. I take your point very strongly, and I try to allude to that, but I think if Europe, in terms of its university research and innovation capacity, is not to dramatically fall behind the really aggressive competition that is coming from elsewhere in the world, then university systems across the EU need to reform. And I choose my words carefully, the new fee regime and the rest of it. But I think the principle of co-financing is one we've rightly established within the UK, and I think the rest of Europe needs to move in that area. But the final point I'd make, Anne, is that often the way we deal with, and the dictates we have about dealing with European funding streams is often down to the fact that within this country, because of our legal system and bluntly because of gold plating of European proposals and directives, we play by a set of rules that elsewhere in Europe are not being played by. Yeah. And I think we need to get better within government and across industry and with universities at actually ensuring that we have a level playing field.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Thank you very much. If we could all thank Bill Rammell.